the business is changing at an exponential rate. And if you're like me, there are far more questions to get answers to than you have time in the day. Each week, I sit down with a unique guest and get their perspective on something interesting in business. It could be something I'm trying to learn, a topic we're seeing happen in the world. It could be demand gen, artificial intelligence, go-to-market, strategy, branding. I get curious, and I'll go lots of places. I hope you enjoy listening to these conversations as much as I enjoy having them. Before we get started with today's guest, please make sure you like and subscribe. Now, on to the show. Welcome back to the Summit. My name is Kyle Hamer. I'm your host of the show. And today's guest is my good friend, Francesca Burns. Francesca, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Hi, Kyle.
For those of you who don't know Francesca, Francesca is an incredibly talented creative director. She's worked in some of the most interesting projects across the UK, London, even down in the Middle East. And she and I worked together at my last CMO role. And we're going to talk a little bit today about brand, creative, building a great brand, building a great creative team to support it. But before we get into all of that, Francesca, why don't you just, you know, give our listeners a little bit of the cliff notes, the highlights, some of the things that you've done and your experiences.
Yeah, so I've been in the creative industry for about 12 years now. I started off as traditional designer, so graphics, print, and fashion design. Then I moved into the technology space, so working mainly on digitalization of e-commerce and kind of runway shows. Then that moved into advertising, brand, and then that kind of went back into tech in a different way, and then a bit more into product. So it's been pretty varied. I'm now the creative director at a company called The Smalls, which is the UK's largest independent content studio and production house. So we have a film festival. Our biggest clients are sort of Netflix, BBC, Nat Geo, kind of those big houses. We do everything from long form to digital, but also moving into the AI space. So yeah, it's been a bit busy since I last worked with you, Carl. But yeah, we were obviously working together at a tech platform company, kind of across the UK and the US, also a little bit in the Middle East. I've spent a lot of time working out there. Some different workflows happen sort of in that part of the world, but super interesting anyway.
Now, just for a bit of additional context, one of the coolest pieces that I think I've ever seen was the work that you did in London on the big giant screen. I don't remember what it's called, but I do remember that you were part of a really large relaunch campaign, if I remember correct. Can you give us kind of like the high level brief and then some of the actions that you took at that agency?
Yeah, so the large screen in Piccadilly, the LED pixels had only ever been changed when was the end of World War II and when Princess Diana died. So the pixels needed to change because the LED was getting pretty ropey, to be honest, and they needed to kind of refresh the whole thing. So we pitched on a campaign to actually be the launch content, the first pieces that kind of advertise that screen, obviously working alongside eBay and like other brands who have their kind of real estate on that screen. But we created a user-generated campaign out of generative art that basically launched that screen from a countdown to a mapped 3D world, which now, this was kind of before the term the metaverse, but I think now would be seen as like a meta world. So it was super successful, and it was nice that we managed to raise money for charity. So one of the first times that a campaign on that scale has been done for charity. So I think from now on, Landsec, you own that building and kind of own the actual screen itself, have now always done a charitable angle, which is good. So we kind of set a bit of a precedent for that, which is nice.
It did turn out beautiful. And having seen the screen in person, I'll say that it was probably well overdue. It was well overdue. So I'm glad that you got to be a part of that project. Now for our listeners, again, just kind of setting the background, we're going to do something a little different today for the show. On today's podcast, I'm going to set up the situation that we brought Francesca into and then some of the things that we asked her to do. One of the major challenges that a lot of go-to-market team leaders in the software space have, whether you're a marketing leader, sales leader, CEO, is figuring out how to get the most out of a creative idea. Everybody says, ooh, creative ideas, let's be creative, let's be innovative. And then they go mirror somebody else displaying platitudes out there, can't figure out why their artists are bored and don't ever deliver inspired work. And then at the end of the day, can't figure out how to manage production or getting things done, because it just becomes this giant thing of artists and creatives drive me insane. Yeah. So for us, we had a little bit different situation that you walked into. When you joined us, you were there to help us tell our story and to tell it from a presentation, whether it was for investors or large pitches. And it became quickly evident after you built the framework and the foundation that there was a lot more capability and skill that you had that we could apply other places. And one of the big problems that we had inside of our marketing department was, is we had capable designers, but the brand wasn't necessarily fully enriched or defined yet. You had bits and parts, you had bits and bobs, if you will, of the brand strategy from colors and typography, but they didn't really fully get down to the tone of voice. It didn't get into what creative expression was. And then at the end of the day, like, we still had to get things out the door. We didn't really have project management that was completely effective for our design team. Like, it still was missing pieces. Yeah. And so we had asked you, Francesca, to come over and help us start to get more out of our team and really structure our message and go to market in a more meaningful manner. With that kind of context and background, where did you start? What was it you saw, and how did you approach this particular challenge in moving out of a, you know, just telling the story from a PowerPoint standpoint to actually telling the broader story in a more creative way?
Yeah, I think from my experience over the years, there's the really like glamorous, sexy side of being creative, which is coming up with amazing ideas, producing great work, the kind of shiny side. But really the backbone of all of that is having a really good process, having the right people in the right place, having the right timelines, having a bit of structure to it. And it's normally an artist or a creative's worst nightmare to put them in that box. But actually what I would always try and facilitate is to be able to give them a big enough box that they can breathe and do their thing, but it's in the parameters of being able to deliver. So delivery, there's no point having amazing ideas if you never can execute them or make them come to fruition. And we had some real strength in terms of brand ideas and capabilities in terms of art capabilities, but maybe utilizing them not in the right way, or there was maybe not enough time management on things. So as I was outside of kind of the marketing department originally, I could see from the outside in rather than being in the weeds and getting kind of bogged down with the weekly stuff. So the first kind of approach was to look at it as a whole of what we were trying to achieve, and taking a lot of direction from you on where you wanted us to sit in the market, where you wanted the direction for us to move in. And then it was how creatively we support that message. So that's being able to utilize the team that we had, utilize resources out there, as well as pushing the boundary a bit of what was possible, with also being able to deliver. And I know we had our kind of big website project and a lot of other elements, but the story that needed to be told needed to be cohesive, and everyone needed to be in the right place, working in the right lanes for that message to be cohesive. Because if you're all off kilter, you're never going to speak the same kind of language. So I think the main thing, and it's not very glamorous, but getting a proper process in place to be able to give people time to do their best work, I think is the most important thing. And it's the kind of creative director's role to make sure everyone's singing along nicely, as well as obviously pushing ideas. But there are people that are going to have much stronger creative ability than you that just need that space to kind of breathe and do their work. So yeah, process, I would say, was kind of the first approach to kind of tackling it, was just getting everything aligned to then actually delve deeper with the support from you and your team, in terms of all of marketing.
Yeah, well, I think one of the big challenges that we had was there was the, call it the creative exploration that wasn't missing, but it was either being over rotated to or completely ignored, right? It was one extreme or the other. And we had individuals on our team who were very talented at creative inspiration, ideation, developing metaverse worlds, and bringing kind of a brand and identity to life. But then when it came to the tactical day-to-day, hey, we just need this digital ad or we need an email, it was breaking down in on production side and getting things into the marketing team for them to deploy in the channels.
Yeah.
How much of getting people in the right place is important to supporting that process? Is it better to start with process and structure, or is it better to see if we can get people in the right place? Or do you kind of have to do them simultaneously?
I think it's a bit of both. And I think the main thing is like getting to know the strength of the people in your team, because it's really easy from the outside to be like a creative can do X, Y, Z. But actually, if you know that they're really poor at, or they find something really challenging, try and take that away from them and give them more of the thing they really are good at, because they'll work more hours, they'll produce better work. Whereas if you're giving someone something that they keep hitting walls at, but actually to someone else, that's really simple. And being able to templatize things or make work a bit smarter, not harder on certain elements, so that you can also convince those people that if you kind of get this bit fixed, you'll buy yourself more time to do the bits that you love. And nothing can always be perfect, and you always get to do your kind of passion projects, but there are ways of being smart with time. And also, when you're dealing with, obviously, in our departments, we had a good understanding of the creative and what that involves, but other elements of the business didn't necessarily have that understanding. So there was a lot of time that we had to spend kind of getting people to understand what we were trying to do, and that kind of hearts and minds work. And that takes a long time, that education piece. So it's juggling all those elements whilst also keeping the creative up to speed. And also buying ourselves a bit more time in terms of from the board and stuff like that to be able to produce good work and, you know, get stuff out, iterate, change quickly, rather than, trying to get everyone's buy-in every, you know, and then it's kind of a bit of a committee. It's juggling all those things at once, I think, that was probably our biggest challenge at times, wasn't it?
It was, you know, and I think about the challenge that we had, you know, initially, I think it was identified as a production challenge where there just wasn't enough oversight or communication. But I do think that your approach in coming in and looking at it a bit holistically and saying, well, it looks like part of our production problem is we just have people playing out of position. Can we shift the structure and get people in the right seats? And then as we did that, it really started to facilitate an increase in production. A lot of organizations don't think about right people, right seats. If you're a CMO, CRO, and you're like, I'm really frustrated with my agency, or I'm really frustrated with, you know, my design department, what are things they should look for? How should they start to think about the problem or their challenge and looking for those skills of how and where to sort people? I mean, you kind of came in with your perspective. Obviously, we collaborated a lot, but it's like you almost put on the Harry Potter sorting hat and you're like, oh, you're a production designer. Oh, you're a brand strategist. Like you had the insight to the different skills and kind of leaned into that. How should others take from your experience, or how can they take from your experience and do something similar?
I think from my experience, I've done a lot of different jobs, so it was easy for me to identify that quite quickly. But obviously for other people who haven't necessarily understanding of those roles, it's going to be getting to know the team as quickly as possible to get to know what their strengths and weaknesses are, but also what they really like to do. I think very few people get asked, which bits do you really love about your job and which bits do you really hate? And I think actually that open conversation and dialogue is really important, because you're at work 8 hours or plus a day, you're spending your whole life doing something. If your team is happy and excited and inspired, the work is going to be produced better, and they're not going to really worry about having to do the jobs they hate so much, because they feel like you have their back to let them do the things they want to do further down the line. So I think communication is, you know, you and I have talked about this loads, is such a massive thing, and really getting to know the goals of the people in your team. So what do they want to get out of their job? You know, where do they want to be next? And I think a lot of people are scared to ask that question, because they might be posed with, well, their life isn't actually at this career right now. But I do think that, you know, you can look at short-term things, like if this is something that you really want to put on your portfolio. And a lot of creatives, designers, art department teams, you know, each piece of work is something that's going to lead to their next project or the next job, or so they want to be proud of it just as much as you want good work. And the more you can provide a happy team and something that they'll put on their portfolio, the more they'll stick around and want to work on your project. So I think it's trying to get to know your team as possible, and also understanding the different disciplines. I think it's quite ignorant sometimes that people, I don't know why UX and UI is put together, because it's a completely different mindset to me. Someone who's a UX kind of thinker and researcher, it's quite different to a UI kind of graphical person. And those two things sometimes are always just shoved together because it used to be web design and it's never evolved a bit further on from that. And I think graphics can be very different to brand, to 3D. And you're lucky sometimes you get someone who can do quite a lot of things. And we had that. We had a really talented team member who could do a lot of things. But actually what they're really best at is normally one thing. So it's finding out that one thing and then being able to facilitate that in like the most valuable way, really. So I think it's learning the different disciplines that really helps, because now it's expanding so quickly. And a lot of things are changing with the use of AI. So you've almost got an extra few team members that don't cost you anything if you just know the right tools. So, you know, you can have a graphic artist that is Midjourney that you are on beta version, and that creates all your artwork or your inspiration or your mood boards or your kind of research. So rather than having a person, you've kind of got those elements, and making sure your team feel comfortable to use those tools and try those things. And I think it's defining the roles properly and understanding a creative isn't, you know, it's quite broad, and someone might have particular skill sets, even when it comes to writing, copy, marketing. You know, there's so many different niches within those elements, and creative is just the same, really. So identifying those things, I think, is important.
It is, you know, and it's interesting. You bring up some interesting different segues into different groups. One of the areas that I see a lot is that businesses assume that brand is just part of marketing and how we talk to the market, but they forget that brand is actually a reflection of your entire organization, how your support phone is answered, when your support phone is answered, the conversation I have with customer success, all the way to how has my experience been thought about inside of the product. And one of the things that we had a challenge with was that we were building a brand and an image that was separate from the design work and creative that was happening inside of our product UI. Yeah. What were some of the areas that you uncovered, or some of the ways in which you looked at and said, hey, this is where we can start to homogenize the marketing side of the art and bring it together with the product side to make it feel more cohesive? What was the approach to that?
I think we had some brilliant skill set in terms of the product team, and we had some brilliant skill set in the marketing team. And a lot of those design skills and those principles were actually aligned. And we had quite an extensive design principle document and design system in the product team that was quite different to what was done in the marketing team, but both had such strengths. But I think they were done in such silos rather than thinking of the brand, as you say, as a whole. And you know, how someone interacts with the button and how the button is shaded should also be intact with what happens on the website and how that works. So it all feels cohesive. And I think what we were kind of aiming to do in our next phase at the previous company was to really marry up those two things and have those departments so closely together. In terms of the research as well, the marketing team had such extensive research on customers and, you know, how people reacted with our product, that would be so useful to the UX team and the product research team. But sometimes that information didn't get transferred because they were seen as completely different entities, but they're actually all in this, you're all doing the same thing, which is trying to deliver a service for your customers. And I think if that can be seen as that way, and I think we were always a bit of an uphill battle trying to get that message across, because that was something you and I really believed in. But I think it's just marrying those parts and understanding each element of what everyone's trying to do and trying to show that it can all be the same thing. There does, however, need to be some kind of autonomy or authority to be able to have the final say, because sometimes if you all have lots of opinions and everyone believes their parts, you know, there needs to be some defining principles to be able to get the product. Otherwise, you don't really move anywhere and kind of go a bit in circles. But I do think that product teams should sit so closely to marketing teams. It's always normally been grouped that sales and marketing are together and product and engineering is kind of this just little aloof bubble somewhere. But actually, the product team could have valued so much more from being closer to the marketing team you had created and the information and the cost, even from a copy point of view, tone of voice, how that's transferred. I think all of those things, you know, from when you first Google something and you land on the website to downloading the app, that should all be the completely seamless journey with the same message. And I think we were on our way to getting there, but it was a bit challenging, I think, at times, because it hadn't ever been, probably before your time and definitely before my time, it had never been really married up before and or seen as something that could be a cohesive brand. I don't think there was necessarily this kind of brand piece done, or people assumed that brand was a brand guide with a logo and some colors in, rather than what it actually means to be a true kind of brand that you know of, like the Apples or Samsung's or those kind of brands nowadays.
You know, it's interesting to me when you talk about brand, because I, as a guy who grew up on the sales side of the organization and then transferred into marketing, you know, about a third of the way through my career, I always had almost a disdain for when somebody would say, "Oh, we've got to strengthen the brand." Well, what the heck does that mean? That's weasel words. It's not, you know, that's not hard data. That doesn't deliver leads to the sales team. Mm. What a bunch of bollocks. But the reality is, when you start going international, you start moving into different markets, you have to be very sensitive to how you position, how you message, how you deliver service, and how that company is perceived. I've come to learn that brand is really just a reflection of how your customer sees you. Yeah. What were some of the challenges with the brand that we had in expanding from, you know, a predominantly UK European company and moving into Australia, New Zealand, moving into the Middle East, trying to get land capture inside of the United States? Like what were some of the challenges that you saw we were addressing and some of the techniques you used to help us get through those?
I think starting off as a predominantly British brand, with kind of a British ethos that had always worked, it was a little bit rigid in the sense that it needed to translate into other areas. And with the current way it was too British to work in other areas. So it needed to have this flex with it that still kept true to its founding principles, but could also identify that in the UAE market, they look at things extremely differently. They're much more sort of high impact video, large scale imagery, less detail, more vision based. The US as well, it's a completely different market to attack in terms of how people care. They've got so much more choice. So you have to really grab them. It's a shorter attention span in terms of they've got millions of options out there, whereas the UK market is quite small. And I think we were maybe naive to think that would, you know, previously that would translate across all of these different markets. So that was a real challenge, not only from spellings, which always came up as a bit of a dispute, which obviously having native websites and stuff in those languages is really important to not offend or to have respect for those different areas, but also to appeal to the nature of those areas. So I think our plan when we started working out was to have a website or our marketing to reflect those areas. So we created a framework that imagery and text obviously could be altered according to the market. So the brand kind of container was always still there as the A-site brand, but the imagery that could attract sort of, you know, say you've got beautiful kind of setup for a trade show, for the UAE market would be super high, like Burj Khalifa style with more interactives, whereas the British market is quite a serious market. So they don't want all the bells and whistles. They want something super clean, and the navy blue is stronger in that element. In the States, we could play a bit more with copy and have a bit more fun and have kind of these bolder moments because we really wanted to stand out against the competition. So it was keeping the brand identity the same, but reflective of the needs of the customers in those markets. And that was kind of our plan, wasn't it, moving forward, to try and make sure that was addressed in all those areas. And also, it's a nice challenge to have. It's again goes back to understanding your customer and understanding how important those regions are. And it's okay to, for things to tweak. You're not kind of having the bits and bobs, as we first mentioned. If your brand is strong enough, it can be templatized and have this kind of container, but also can change to the different regions. So that was kind of the plan.
Well, I think one of the things that was specifics that I found, it was a big learning for me in the role, was when I got to the organization, if we did a sales enablement piece or a one page, two page brochure, something, we put all of the numbers, all of the web addresses, all of the email addresses on one brochure, and then we used it around the globe. And it wasn't really until we started working with you specific in the Middle Eastern region where we started to actually move away from that, because it was like, no, that's not seen as valuable. It's actually seen as distracting and almost disrespectful that, hey, we don't care enough to create one that's just for you.
For you, yeah.
How many organizations make that mistake? Like, how many organizations have you worked with where they're like, oh yeah, we're just one size fits all. And then the next day it's like, ooh, well, maybe that, you know, we should look at, somebody described it to me as transcribing, not translating, but actually transcribing. You rewrite your copy, you rewrite your content, you redo your imagery to make it fit for that particular region.
I think it's a bit arrogant for brands to think that their brand doesn't need to change according to the markets. You know, people from different cultures, different walks of life, different, you know, what appeals to them. If your brand has that strength and the core message is there, why shouldn't it change to appeal to those people? Because it should be multifaceted. I think when people are too rigid and stubborn, that's when it's maybe not the strength of brand that it could be. And that's actually, I think a lot of organizations, unfortunately, either don't have the time or the capacity and therefore fall short and, you know, lose out on those things, or maybe are too arrogant to want to kind of change and think that maybe they are good enough, they don't have to do that. But why wouldn't you adapt and make your customer feel as welcome, as comfortable, as accepted, as important as you can? Because to me, that's kind of what marketing is making a customer feel valued and inspired to want to use your product or service. So I think it's an oversight massively for a lot of companies not doing that. And when we have done that, my previous agency, Engage Works, we tailored everything. We would even get translated decks and creds, and anytime we did a proposal, we would do it in Arabic and in English. So it was, you know, respectful to the people in those rooms that we really want to work with them. And we appreciate that their native language was Arabic. So, and it, every time it paid off. It's that attention to detail of going that little extra mile to show you care. And people love to feel appreciated or something special from a company rather than, you know, them thinking that they're too good to change, I think it's really important.
You know, I think it's interesting because for me, and there was a piece that we created for one of the shows in the Middle East that we wanted to have kind of this big thought leadership, futuristic feel, right? We wanted to pull our brand forward to the innovators that had been for years and lean into that. But yeah, the technology didn't really support doing that. So we created this video. And the video was maybe 90, 120 seconds. It wasn't very long, but it was this super kind of buzzy, high amp, high energy film that when we showed it to the other teams, they kind of scratched their head and they're like, there's not enough detail here. Like, there's not enough meat. I don't understand. Like, what are you trying to do? But when we showed it in the region, it was met with intrigue and mystery. And it hit the mark for the audience, but it wasn't something that we could really leverage in other regions. If you're trying to break into a new region, should you repurpose old content, or do you think that you should go the extra mile and build a couple of things that really will resonate with your audience?
I think first thing is audience profiling, really understanding who your audience is and making that very clear, and not, you know, be willing to say this isn't going to work for them, like this is not going to translate. And it might be that you have to do that extra investment if you're going to a new market, to factor in that things need to change to fit that market. And the research needs to be done at the beginning so that when the work is produced and it doesn't, you would never show it in another region, but people understand, but that definitely works there. So it's already got its box checked because you've got the data and the audience profiling to back it up. I think it is important because there's other people in those regions that are going to be producing work who are native to that region, or products or services that are native to that region, who are already going to hit the mark. So if you want a chance, you should adapt to that market rather than thinking that you can just repurpose something that was used in a completely different market. I would always try, if budget permits, obviously, to go the extra mile, because it is worth it. And, you know, that can open a whole new area in those markets.
It almost, I mean, if I'm listening and I take and we remove market and we put employee, it's almost the exact same way you should approach working with creatives.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, there's not one size fits all in anything, really, I don't think, in life. So it's taking the individual and what they need and really trying to tap into that. I think that goes the same with product and being, you know, the way that profiling can be done now, and, you know, making something bespoke to you and your needs, and what you see when you open up that app is everything that you want to see, not what everyone else sees, you know, really dialing down onto another layer. And same goes for people marketing. It's bringing the human side back into things rather than it being this blanket kind of thing that's just blurted out for everyone to see.
So for those that are listening and maybe struggling with getting the most out of their creative departments, what are some practical things that you did when you came in to help improve production? Talk about how you did some of your assessments, talk about how you did your meetings, talk about how you supported the creatives, because there's a concept when working with an agency of getting a creative brief and getting, you know, reading in the creatives. A lot of marketing departments don't do that, or if they do that, they do a version of that. Yeah. How can organizations build a highly productive creative team, whether it's copywriters, designers, UI, how can they build a flywheel that's really producing great things consistently?
I think before you can structure a process in terms of project planning or utilization or timesheets or billable hours or making something reactive, it all starts with having a good brief. If you don't know what you want out of a creative team, and you don't know what the end goal of what you're trying to achieve, they have no chance in like fulfilling your ambition. So really stress testing the brief, making sure that all the detail is there, so that I would sometimes offer as a buffer between it got to the creative team to really be like, but why are we doing this? A million questions back, so that everyone's really comfortable, brief signed off before it even starts to go into production. That way you can accurately quote on time, you can allocate the correct people, you know what the deliverables are, you can actually make each milestone of review as well more productive by having workshops at the beginning and then also those key elements that get signed off along the way. I think without a proper brief, that's the first thing that I would make sure. And that can also be templates that have checklists. You can also look into stuff that you've done previously, so having all the formats already there, the specs, so that you know if these are social banners, everything is there, so that when the designer gets that work, it's just a checklist for them to fill out to make sure all the sizes are correct. And we've seen a lot of things before being like, oh, I need some social banners. What channel? What size? What's the message? So what are you trying to achieve from it? Are they paid? Are they unpaid? Are they, you know? So I think having all of that information before it goes into the funnel is the kind of the first step. The second step is allocating the right resource. So looking at time and deliverables, and then who would be best suited to do that work. If it's something more simple, that's a template, maybe someone more junior could do it. Or if you're on a, you know, if there's enough time, a junior person could take on that work because the work is simple. Or if you haven't got any time, you might need a senior person to do it because they've done hundreds of them before and it can just get it out the door. So it's looking at everything from your time frame to what the actual pieces of work are. And then I think being really clear on allocation of projects. So in the same way you would do this with a dev or a product team, it's kind of working in sprints in the same way. So beginning of the week, all of those projects come in that need to be done, and then allocating the right people. I think if people can work in blocks of half days, and they can chunk their time so they know, right, this morning I've just got to get through all of this stuff, they can stay focused. A lot of creatives really struggle to work on a 3D project, then jump into something which is an animated video or a GIF for a banner. because their heads are in the 3D product, not there. So it's trying to be reasonable. Obviously, when you've got deadlines, you can't just do one thing per day, but I think you can always split into two blocks. And normally with a break for lunch, you can kind of get your head out of the first one and into the second one. It's normally quite tricky to hold more than two or three projects in your head at once. So I think it's allocating that in a smart way. Also leaving Friday mornings for, you know, some of the simpler tasks, and then having Friday afternoons as like inspiration time. So by the end of the week, when you're a bit frazzled and you feel a bit burnt out, Friday afternoon is time to get inspired, do something fun, like look into a new product, software. Then by Monday, you've had time to come up with all the ideas, so you're ready to hit the ground running. And that's not always possible. But I do think structure is really important. And most people think that creatives are so fluid, and they need, for them to be able to operate properly, you need to give them a really good routine so that they can be fluid in that time. And it's kind of a bit of a myth that everything just kind of happens all at once and it's chaos. Like, the chaos is the imagination that goes inside the container, effectively. So I think treating it more like a development team in some ways really helps, because it gives people the chance to explore those ideas. And having regular reviews as well, I've always said that not just the creative team are creatives, and the beginning kickoff should always be any ideas, any opinions, everyone kind of all in, so that people feel heard as well. I think if you can get stakeholder buy-in at the beginning, it helps, because creative, as we know, is so subjective, that having those key touch points all the way along helps to get the final idea over the line.
You know, I think one of the things, as you all talk through how to get the most out of the team and even how to structure things, I think it's really important to acknowledge that there are usually more than one person. There are multiple people involved in a creative idea coming to life, right? It takes time. I know there were times when we were working on a video and you'd say, hey, can you proof this? Or you'd send it over and I'd go, who's the audience? How are we thinking about this? Why are we using a $3 word when a 50 cent word would work just as well, right? That there was trying to understand without enough context made it challenging. So, you know, I think one thing that maybe you left off is check in often, right? So after a first hour block, where are we at just from a design or an ideation standpoint? Check in with your creatives to see if they're on track, because nothing's worse than getting through first draft and it's like we crumpled the whole thing up, threw it in the trash, and now we expect it still to be finished by tomorrow. That feedback loop needs to happen more fluidly and more quickly than I think a lot of organizations really allow for.
I also think that comes in the concepting stage. It's something that I brought into my previous business as a discovery phase with clients. And also what I'm doing now is to actually allow budget time for the concepting phase, so that two concepts, like you kind of all work together as a team and two concepts are come up with that everyone agrees on. Then one is picked before the design work starts, so that no one's really shocked. It's not ever going to get completely thrown in the bin. Yes, the route may have taken a very different turn, but you're kind of allowing that time for thinking at the beginning, so that everyone's brought in and like the brief is completely sealed with this is what we're going to achieve, whether that's a 4-minute video with these key elements highlighted and everyone's agreed on that before it goes into the kind of artworking or design or copywriting. So it's always front loading that front bit with more time. Then normally it's kind of given time for the production part, but actually the ideation and sign off bit at the beginning is really important alongside the brief, obviously.
When should an organization get somebody with your skills and bring somebody in who kind of acts as a creative director and helps get the most out of their design production, or even their, you know, their brand, their arts, their art department? When should they, is that at a certain number of customers, is a certain number of revenue? Hey, should you have it since day one? Where do you think that's kind of the right fit?
I think I've worked in like large organizations and startups. So I think it's, if people can start to see marketing and creative as kind of the same thing in some ways, and it's such an essential role within the marketing team. A lot of people used to see it as, oh, we've got a marketing team, then we'll need a graphic designer to do the brochures or to do the ads. When actually your brand and creative and strategy of how you're visually shown and your tone of voice and how you come across as a brand, that's pretty essential, I think, from day one. A lot of companies obviously can't afford to have someone in such a senior role, but they can have maybe afford 1 or 2 days a week to align all the processes, get everything in place so that the team then can keep running. But I think it needs someone to help steer right at the beginning, on even maybe at the beginning of a year or the beginning of when a new strategy or vision is kind of put forward as a business, is what they're trying to achieve in the next 3 years. At that early stage of mapping out that trajectory, I think that's when you bring in the creative director to sit with the CMO and to be like, right, have we covered all bases of the plan? And when that plan is in place, as long as everyone's kind of following the flow and, you know, staying in their lanes and trying to, obviously that takes a bit of upkeep, but that could be a project manager, you know, once the strategy is set. I think if you can bring it on as early as possible, whether that's if you're doing a new website, a rebrand, or you're just changing the tact or strategy, or investments come into the business, or you've recently sold or IPO'd, I think all of those things is the time to, when you're rethinking a big structure, I think that's when someone with my skill set could really help to iron out the mistakes before they become them at the beginning. So just getting everything, a proper process put in place, then you could have a creative team managed by a project manager, if that's more in line with your budget and you use a pool of freelancers. So it was as and when the projects come in, rather than, you know, a full-time employed team. And that, for like our upfront creative work, could be done by a creative director on a consultancy basis. So you're not forking out, you know, a full year salary. There's ways of tweaking it and getting the expertise in the plan. And also having an official document rather than information in someone's head, you've got a Bible to stick by that you can tell people off with, or you can make people follow, and people will get annoyed by it. But it's having that those rules that really helps everyone kind of keep in line. And once they're set, there's no need to really change them. They obviously evolve over time as the market changes or technology, but generally your principles should be the core of what you stand for and your values as a business. So why shouldn't that be communicated as a visual value and a visual principle as well? So I think as early as possible. But again, if budget is not, if you don't have a lot of money to invest in that, there's ways of using freelancers or having a different system that could work for lower budget or smaller companies.
What are absolute no-nos? If you're a CMO, CEO, CRO, and you're going to go work with creatives, what are some of the things that are hard and fast that you're going to fail every time, or you're going to set your team up to fail every time? What are things that you should absolutely not do?
Ooh, I think probably not really having respect for the profession of a creative and just assuming that it's sticking and gluing or painting, or, you know, just these kind of words, that it's not a valued profession or something that is integral to the business. I think it's often, you know, CEOs or other CROs start to look at it as an oversight. It's kind of fluff. It's the stuff around the edges that, you know, is not necessary to a business. But gaining a customer and acquiring that customer comes from the brand, the identity, why they choose to pay money, how that customer feels when they're with you, whether that's the service you offer or the letterhead they receive or how they're invoiced or all of that stuff. Actually, brand touches every point of the business, and sales doesn't touch every point of business. So it should be weighted the same, because creative is something that every person, whether you're an employee or a customer, will be in touch with. So it's just getting some people to change their mindset on that, that it's not just the fluffy bits around the edges that can be taken out at, you know, when it's not necessary. I think if you really think about your customers, it's the most necessary part. And there's ways of making it, you know, more cost effective, and making it, even just making something uniform so it's consistent, is such a win across a bigger business as well, when, you know, different people come, go. Some days people don't have the right templates, so they make their own, and then the next thing the whole thing's unraveled into a massive mess. But I think it's the biggest no-no would be the oversight, I think, and not really understanding the importance of, you know, reframing it maybe. And maybe creatives don't do it justice sometimes in describing how how the industry works and how important it is. And I guess we're always often backed up by the marketing department, but sometimes for sales or other elements, they don't necessarily value it in the same way that maybe they should. So I think reframing would help solve that problem. The no-no is the oversight, I would say.
It's interesting because as you were talking through that, for me, I think to some of the project work that I've done over the years, and one of the things that I see often is that you hire a new VP of marketing or new CMO, and the first thing they do is they come in and they want to rip out the website and replace it. And I think that sometimes the no-no for leaders is that they change too much or they don't change enough. So, you know, you look at, there are sites today that are in certain industries and you look at the company, it offers a great product, great service, but they haven't done much UI UX work or done much design work for probably, you know, 10, 12 years. All of a sudden you went from being an industry leader to being a laggard just because you're not staying on top of current design systems, principles, thinking about how your customer will feel when they're interacting with you. And so the biggest no-no, I think, just goes to echo what you're saying, is you can't ignore the art. Marketing isn't just arts and crafts. There's a lot more to it. And there's a lot of passion in romancing your customer, right? Really understanding
the psychology behind it.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I use this analogy a lot. To me, is if you're thinking about how to go get a market, it's thinking about how would you start off a romance, or how would you pursue somebody that you were interested in, right? You're going to ask different questions. You're going to be intentional. You're going to be in constant communication. Yeah. And you start to reflect what that person, their thoughts, their hopes, their dreams, their wishes are in how you're presenting yourself. You're marketing yourself. Now, it's not marketing yourself to lots of people, right? It's to specific people. And I think that brands, companies alike, oftentimes think, oh, I'll be this to this person, or I'll be that to that person. And they forget what helped them get traction to begin with. And that's a big no-no, I think. I think especially with you working with creatives, because I've seen a lot of creative briefs where it's, we want to work this persona, this persona, this persona, that industry, this particular thing, and we only want one.
Yeah, and actually that leads me on to trying to do too much at the same time. So the biggest thing that can really cause problems is a lack of focus on the vision. I think if you can stick to one thing and do it really, really well and really nail that from start to finish, from your lead gen to your creative to your sales, everything is done because you're on that one kind of clear goal. And of course, when that goal is working and the machine is well oiled, of course, innovate and create something else or move on to something else. But a lot of times we found it quite frustrating when the goalposts were changing every week to new things. What was the priority? Where are we focusing? And what happens then is things get done outside of our nice, neat little process that we finally got in place. And then people are going rogue with the brand, and that's when it dilutes and actually it makes the whole thing look weaker, rather than having, you know, thinking it looks like this is a bigger entity with loads of things going on. You're actually just weakened your core thing that people use you for, and understanding that. So I think trying to do too much at once, obviously you have goals to meet and there's needs for the business, but I think trying to take a slower approach to things and doing it properly the first time, because we both know creating a brand and your brand guidelines and your ethos takes a long time. There's a lot of blood, sweat and tears put into it. If you're having to redo that because someone else has a new opinion further down the road, or if it's not had enough time to make it robust enough to bat away all those comments, then you're just going to be changing to whoever, you know, with the wind of whoever the priority is that week. And therefore you're building something that doesn't have the strength to last over time. And a new team will come in and re-want to do redo everything, rather than actually there's some really amazing core principles here that why would we change them? They work for what we're trying to achieve. So I think, trying to keep focus and not do too many things at once, which is always tricky, I think.
My high school football coach, which I know it's a different thing in Britain than it is in the States, but he used to say, do it right, do it light. If you do it wrong, do it all day long. And I think that, you know, the paraphrasing there to what you're saying is that I think it's a perfect way to end our podcast in that, listen, creating a design or a brand, a team that scales, a brand that resonates, it takes time and you need to go through the right steps in order to get there. If you don't, you'll be spending a lot of time doing a lot of rework.
Yeah. And that also just causes huge burnout. I think it creates such frustration in a design team, and every designer hates having to redo something three times because they don't know who their audience is and who's going to approve it. And things are so subjective, and that can just make you go mad as a designer. So I think avoiding the reworks and getting it right first time and getting all the information correct and the buy-in, do as much of the upfront stress as you can to enable the smoothest delivery, I think is important.
That's great. For those who want to get a hold of you, if they have questions about their own design team, they have questions about how to hire a creative director, or they need some work done, what's the best way to get a hold of you, Francesca?
Yeah, so at the moment, I'm the CD at The Smalls, so you can get hold of me there, which is fran.burns@thesmalls.com, but also on LinkedIn, Francesca Burns. So I do a lot of consultancy work on the side, and I run my own small branding agency. So a bit of a mixture of stuff, but yeah, always happy. I've got a massive network. We're actually, the community I run currently at The Smalls, we're in over 150 different countries, and we've got 24,000 community members. So that's everything from animation to graphics to UX UI, and they all kind of work in this like independent way. We also have such a global spread that depending on your budget, depending on your location, time zone, we can normally facilitate. So it's quite an exciting time. So yeah, if you need any support on anything, just let me know.
That's great. The Smalls doesn't sound that very small.
Yeah, so it originally started as small films on small screens for small people. So it was helping independent filmmakers get a chance to showcase their work. So one of our biggest things is diversity and inclusion. So opening what is quite a nepotistic closed market, which is Hollywood and film and all of that stuff, we're opening it up to independent people from all walks of life that get an opportunity to create. So it's giving back to the small people and not also just benefiting the big clients. We have a film festival that runs actually the third weekend in September. It's over 4 days and the submissions are open now. So if anyone wants to apply a film, it's an amazing thing. And we have lots of different categories. So just have a look at the Smalls Film Festival website and you'll see everything there.
That's great. Well, I will make sure that we have links in the in the description of the podcast. For those of you that have been listening, this has been another week and another episode on The Summit. I'm your host, Kyle Hamer. A very special thank you to Francesca for all of her help and openness today, not only today on the podcast and sharing your insights, but also over the last 2 years in helping us transform our organization. It has been amazing working with you. And until next week, like, subscribe, and we will see you soon.